Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast. I'm Alan Seals, your host for the show, and our guest today is Alyssa Fox. She's the standby for Elphaba on Broadway in Wicked. This continues our Wicked takeover. If you haven't listened to any of the previous episodes, just pause, scroll back through your feed, make sure you listen to everybody else, but then come back to this one because, wow, Alyssa was so much fun to talk to. She's got this great story of being with Wicked, I think she said for 12 years, whether it was with a tour or the San Francisco production, and then she took a brief break to be Casey Levy's standby in Broadway's Frozen. So her incredible, her journey is absolutely fun, and can't wait to share it with you. So find me online, Instagram and Twitter. Of course, at theater_podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, find me on TikTok, whatever you want to do, whatever your method is, reach out. Let me know you're listening. And now everybody, please enjoy this episode with Alyssa Fox.
Here you go. 1, 2, 3.
Today's guest was one of the original cast members of Frozen on Broadway, where she covered the role of Elsa. After she let it go, she started traveling the country as the understudy for Elphaba in Wicked, but we'll get to the timeline of all this. Okay, so first she was in San Francisco production in the 2012 national tour, then she led the national tour in 2015, became the Elphaba Broadway standby in 2016, which she then left. And that's when she went to Frozen and now has come back to Broadway as the Elphaba standby. She's a coach who likes to talk about fulfilling her lifelong dream of becoming true Disney royalty. Alyssa Fox, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be joining you today.
The way I read the bio, it makes it sound like you coach people on talking about fulfilling their lifelong dreams of becoming Disney royalty, but that's not how it sounds. It's misplaced modifier. So tell us about your Disney royalty dreams.
So I grew up with a great love of Disney and Disney princesses and the storytelling that goes on there. And it was my first like introduction to acting and storytelling while singing. And I always wanted to be a singer. And that was like number one. So that was kind of how I saw what I could possibly do in the future, because I didn't really know about like Broadway and musical theater. So I always thought that I would be a Disney princess on like a voice on an animated film, but I actually got to like embody an actual Disney princess or queen on stage as a person, not a disembodied voice. And that was really, really a dream that I got to accomplish that I think younger me would be very proud of.
Was there any specific movie that you were really attached to when you were a kid?
Well, all of them. But I loved Pocahontas. I loved Beauty and the Beast. I had a Beauty and the Beast poster on my wall and a Little Mermaid poster on my wall. Little Mermaid was like my favorite, probably. I had mom fast forward through the Ursula parts, though. They were scary.
Yes, yes. I love that stuff. As a Disney... my grandfather helped build Disney World. He was on the engineering project management team. And so like we went there all the time when I was a kid. We'd go visit grandma and grandpa down in Florida and we would go to Disney World for free because we went with him. So my love for Disney is incredible. And we got all the movies, watched all of that stuff on repeat, wore out the VHS tapes.
Absolutely. In those plastic cases.
Yes, yes, the clamshells. So the clamshells.
Yes, shelves and shelves and shelves of those clamshell plastic VHS holders.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And so then, was that the impetus for starting to get into musical theater? Was the Disney love and I guess Little Mermaid and whatnot?
Yeah, I think that... I didn't really get into theater or musical theater until like very much later. And I always knew that I wanted to be a singer, but Disney was kind of the way that I saw that that could be possible to like make a career out of singing and expressing emotion and storytelling So that was kind of like, it was like I had a precursor to musical theater before I even knew it.
Well, yeah, that I think touches children in a way that they, or it touches humanity, right? Like storytelling, singing, yes. There's always the dancing, it's animals, but it's presented in a way that is consumable for younger children.
100%. I think that's, it's a really great introduction to like theatrical expression.
Right. And I think it brings people into this world where the message is about acceptance, and the message is about finding your chosen family or your real family, or like trying to be someone you're not, and that doesn't work out, so you have to be yourself.
Right. There's a sense of like authenticity, and that's what we all kind of aspire to. So I think there are a lot of good things about growing up with Disney.
So Disney kid turned into obviously performing adult. Was there
Disney adult?
A Disney adult and a performer.
Proud Disney adult.
Proud Disney adult. Was there a time, a touch point, a turning point at any point during the young or teenage years where you said, "This is what I want to do. This becomes my career"? Or are you're still not there yet?
I knew I always wanted to be a singer. That was always number one, but I didn't really know what that was going to be. I think maybe at a certain point, I thought that I was going to be like a recording artist or something. But then I grew up singing live, and I got a real attachment to live performance. And there's nothing like that, like singing for an audience and having that energy in front of me. I grew up singing in church. So that was like the big thing. I just loved it so much. And so I think I didn't really do a lot of theater. I did like church musicals and things like that. And then like some school things, but I was more into choir. And then I think it was not until like my senior year of high school when I discovered Wicked. When I discovered Wicked, I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. I'm going to do this. So I was a little older. I think a lot of people start when they're very young. But I always knew I wanted to sing, but theater became like the thing pretty late, later.
Discovered it as in like sound, just the cast album?
Or? The cast album.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're similar in age then, because it was the same for me. It was like that around that time for me when the cast album for Wicked came out, and then I started just going down this rabbit hole of other things like Rent, yes. Right? You know,
yes. And I was just like absorbing literally every bit of musical theater ever. The old stuff, the new stuff, the classics, the modern weird concept musicals. You know, I just gained a wonderful appreciation for this new exciting thing in my life.
Have you thought back about what it was about musical theater that really made you latch on? Because there's being in church, there's literal spirituality. Being yes. in the real world, there's all sorts of different cliques and groups and whatnot. And so why musical theater did you say, this is where I want to put my energy?
You know, it was a lot of it was listening to Idina sing and the power behind it. And the emotion behind it, I was like, you know, I sang with emotion anyways with church. And so that kind of started my, you know, expressive love for singing. And so when I heard it, I was like, oh, this is different. And I looked at a picture of her and I was like, oh, this is like my type. I can do this.
You do look very similar.
I know. And now I get to do both Elsa and Elphaba. There's like a pipeline there. You know, Idina is the connection there. But it was really like I heard it the first time and I was like, this is it. This is it for me. And so it was like my first realization of, oh, Broadway is it for me. And I just went from there. That was like the jumping off point, and I just dove in deep right off the bat.
What is it? October 30th. Yeah, we're coming up on 20 years of Wicked. It opened
Wicked
October 30th, 2003.
So this next year. So 19.
Well, like,
this is year 19.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's math. Math is hard. Right.
I'm not a math person either.
You ever take a global shutdown and a pandemic? We'll see.
Your brain gets a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
And we just delete the 2 years that we kind of had off there.
You know, and it's still kind of going in and out. Okay. So Wicked's currently the fifth longest running Broadway show in history. It's won more than 100 international awards, right? So you got started with Wicked, you were saying 12 years ago.
2010, I started as the understudy for Elphaba for Edith Espinosa, who's incredible.
Also, it could be your twin.
Right. We all kind of like, all the Elphabas kind of look like sisters, you know? And then we become sisters by doing the role. But so I understudied. I was very young. I had no idea what I was doing. I had never done like a big production contract like that before. I kind of started up here. And my story of getting the job is a journey in itself. I knew that I was in college. It didn't really work out for me. I was not a good student. So I dropped out and I saw that there was an open cattle call, non-equity cattle call on playbill.com. And I was like, I'm going to go to New York. And I'm going to go to this cattle call and I'm going to get Elphaba. It's just what's happening. It's like, I knew. I was like, this is what's happening. So I did not have a lot of money. I never had a lot of money. I grew up not with much. So I spent the like $500 in my bank account, flew to New York for the first time ever. I'd never been to New York, went to this open cattle call and, I did what I knew that I was going to do. And so initially I got my first job initially from a non-equity cattle call in 2008, like a long, long, long ago.
That's insane. I know you grew up in Dallas?
In Texas? Dallas, that's
yeah,
right.
So were
yeah,
you still,
Garland,
were you,
Texas.
Were you still there in college?
I was living in Oklahoma City. I went to Oklahoma City University, where I had an incredible voice teacher, Vicky Kelly, who is now retired. But it was an interesting experience because, like I said, not a good student. Probably should have gone a different direction, but I did learn a lot. I also learned that college was not for me. And so I was like, I want to work. Let's go. Let's go. I'm ready for this. Let's go. So I left and I think it was a good decision. I think it worked out pretty well.
It seems like it was pretty good.
Doing fine.
So you show up in New York, non-ec cattle call, get to
500
the,
girls waiting outside, Telsey outside in the rain.
Specifically for Elphaba, or was it just the generic union required annual thing?
It was just the generic kind of thing where they just like had like four or five rooms of assistant casting directors and then the main casting director's room that you're moved into if they like you, if you pass the first test. But it was like you sing eight bars a cappella. And so they just bring people in and out like fast, like hundreds and hundreds of people.
Did you sing from Wicked?
I had just done Little Women at OCU doing Jo March, and I sang Astonishing. I sang eight bars at the end of Astonishing. And then once I moved to the other room with Craig Burns, then he had me sing a little bit of the Wicked of Defying Gravity. And it was really crazy because I had no frame of reference for what an audition even was. So I was like, this is what it's like. And then now I'm like, wow, that was really crazy. Eight bars a cappella, like.
Yeah.
What a strange thing to ask for.
Did they have you read or anything? Or was just, I mean, the cattle call, like, obviously they want to get people in and out as quickly as possible.
So they had me. I came back and I left at that time. And then I got a call like a couple months later. And they said I was on their like list of like people to call back. And I did not have an agent. Like I was pretty like doing things myself. Like the decision was myself. And I kind of kept going that way. So I had like the casting director calling me personally on my cell phone while I was working at a tea shop in Oklahoma City. So I flew back and forth to New York probably 5 different times over the year and a half between when I first did the cattle call and when I booked Wicked in San Francisco.
Wow. That's insane.
It's a wild story. Once I booked the show, I had $18 in my bank account. And I didn't know how I was going to even afford food that weekend. Wicked really changed my life and turned it into something that I am very fortunate and lucky. And I am so lucky to be doing, to be able to go from that to this is just a complete turnaround.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating. So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that 5 times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Did you ever think that you would be living? I mean, I think the understudy standby swing life is so difficult, so much harder. Yes. In a different way than sustaining the lead 8 times a week, because
it messes with your head. It really does. And most of my career has been standing by. Like the vast majority of my career has been standing by.
Well, I think it's hard to find people.
I think I'm built well for it.
Yeah, it's hard to find people who
it can go from 0 to 100.
Right. Well, you were saying before we started recording that, mm-hmm. that you went on recently on Broadway for Elphaba, and you hadn't gone on for 6 months before that?
Yeah. So I was filling in. I filled in on and off when someone was injured or had COVID, jumping in and out of the show like 3 different times from September to now. So I got to perform back in November or December was my last time. And then this past Wednesday was my first time back.
So how does it work for, I think it's sort of different for every show, but like we've got, let's see, Ali Trim is the Glinda standby. Mm-hmm. You are the Elphaba standby. Emily Rogers is the Elphaba understudy. Celia Hottenstein is the Glinda understudy. So we've got understudies and standbys. So yes. How does it work in terms of when you know you're going to go on versus like, Are you hanging out in the wings during the whole production? Is there a certain point, like when act two goes up, where you're like, all right, now I can go home?
Yes, actually. Luckily, in Frozen, it was not like that. We couldn't leave until it's all up to the stage manager. But as long as the understudy is in the building, the standby, at least we can leave, you know, once the downbeat of act two happens. I usually stay later because I get stuck to that dressing room couch. It's very comfortable. but I am always in the dressing room ready to go. Not painted or anything, but just like mentally like at work, you know? But I do get to, you know, have this job where most of the time is waiting, is being patient. And once I get to go on, I usually find out day of, sometimes very close to the show, sometimes, you know, hours and hours before, where I can like tell people to come to the theater. but usually it's pretty last minute for a standby, and we don't usually know dates that we're going to be on until day of.
So
there's like planned things.
But yeah. So the standby, so the understudy goes on if it's like known, like a vacation thing, if it's known well in advance and standby's there.
So usually it's kind of up to the stage manager again, but usually the standby will go on is the first line. A first line of defense is the standby once the lead is out. And then if the standby is out, then the understudy will go on. And the understudy has their own ensemble track too. So they're in the show every night.
Right. Yeah. So your whole job is to know everything about Elphaba. And not going on though, do you do put-in rehearsals? Do you do touch-ups? Like
yes. They usually because the lead Elphaba is probably so tired and doing all the shows, either I or Emily Rogers will do rehearsals when a new person comes in. Usually that they kind of have us jump into those things. So we do definitely have rehearsals and things like that.
But it's not for you. It's for other people. It's for
usually,
new people.
Yeah.
So
I've been doing it such a long time that they're like, oh, you're fine. Just you know, we'll have like one day of rehearsal, then you're fine, right? And I was like, yeah, definitely.
yeah. There was a show that I did at Busch Gardens Williamsburg. Not quite the caliber of Broadway, but it was like a 25-minute show that during the height of the summer, we would do 10 times a day.
A theme park, but that sounds exhausting.
Oh my God, it was. And somewhat, ironically, last night, I was with one of my Busch Gardens friends, and we just started busting out my opening number, and it's been a decade. And
it sits in there.
And it just sits and never
That's
leaves.
Exactly what I thought. So I had been doing Frozen for a few years, and then the pandemic happened. So it had been 5 years from the time I came back to Wicked. And I was like, I told Mary Beth, the stage manager, I was like, I don't know that I remember anything. And she was like, okay, well, let's just like run through it and see what you remember. I was like, it just started to come out of my mouth. And I started to like move my body. And I was like, it is in there.
Yeah.
I remember everything. And so it made me think like, what else is in my brain that I have stored that I just can't unlock until I start doing it? It's pretty wild that it's in you.
It's in
Once you.
You
do something and you memorize something and work on something and repeat it that many times, it just, there's a groove in your brain, you know, it just wears.
There's a smell. What is it? Smell is the most,
memory.
The sense that most tied to memory,
yes.
right?
Yes. And I imagine. Have a very, very good sense of smell to my detriment.
New York is not the city for you during the summer.
I mean... Truly, it doesn't smell great. I love you, New York, but you're a little stinky.
You're a little stinky. I was walking around in the 98 degree heat last night, and it was a lot stinky.
Yes.
So
the whole city like melts.
Yes, I was imagining that. What I was saying was I'm sure if you haven't been on stage in a while, but I'm sure the paint has a smell, right? So
the dressing rooms,
right.
The theater itself.
So as soon as you, like if you're in Dallas, if you're somewhere else, right, then it's going to take a little bit to get back into it. But when you go back into that group, you fall into that track.
Yes.
Literally, it's a track, right? You fall into that, and then you all of a sudden you get to the other side and you're taking your bows and you're like, oh yeah, I remembered everything. That was great.
Yes. Wow. Yes. Oh, I just did that. I remembered it and we did it.
Yeah.
And you know, you just got to be careful not to like go completely on autopilot when it's that like built into your body. You're like, okay, wake up. Let's do this show right now.
Do you have trouble with that at all? I guess being detached from it after not doing it for a while versus overthinking it? Because I find that, you know, some people when they overthink it, that's when they start to forget words. But when they just let it go, you know, no pun intended for Frozen, let it go. When they just kind of let it go and let the nerves go away, which I don't know if that ever happens, it comes more naturally. And like you said, it just, everything just blurts out.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes it's like, people always say like starting Wicked and doing Wizard and I right off the bat is like being shot out of a cannon. So that's a crazy feeling because you have to just run out on stage and then it just goes from there. You don't really get a break as Elphaba. It's just a marathon of running around and screaming is what I always say. Running around and screaming.
Okay, so your audition story, insane.
Pretty wild.
First time you wanted to be on stage since you were a kid, discovered Wicked, helped you get into theater. The first time you're going on as Elphaba on Broadway, end of Act One, Defying Gravity, getting hoisted up that damn cherry picker. Do you remember that? Do you remember what you were feeling in that moment?
I think usually first shows, you don't really remember anything. You just do it. And then your brain, once like the curtain like comes down, you're just like, how did I do that? Did I do it? how did it sound? I have no idea. So you're just kind of like, but I think there's a lot that's just like, you get that first show out of the way and then you're like, okay, I got this. And I've never struggled with like nerves, but there are parts in the show, like right before that cherry picker, when there are some technical things that have to be done, plus getting ready to sing like the hardest ending to the hardest song. I'll add that on. I'll tack that on to Elsa too. It's always that final, you know, number in act one finale is always like the big one. And so the nerves don't really come until like that point for me, like on stage. I don't have much of like the pre-show anxiety or anything, but it's more like on stage, there are these moments where you're just like, oh, I better be sharp. I better be on, you know? So you turn your brain on, you're like, I am present right here in this moment, doing the show. Yeah.
With the show as technical as Wicked and others, I just get so worried about, for myself, I would get worried about walking into a set piece, forgetting what's coming on and what's going off and whatnot.
It happens.
Right?
I mean, I'm kind of a clumsy person. There has been numerous times where I have just bit it on stage. I just slipped and fell. I mean, it's happened in every show that I've done. I just got to keep my feet under me. But yeah, it is very much like there's so many moving parts, you know, just walls coming in, like light towers, you know, props, you know, dancers who are just like really doing their thing, kicking their legs. And you're like, okay, avoid that Leduca heel right there.
Did you ever go down the dancing route, or was that something that you've explored?
No.
No?
Oh, that's a thing that I always struggled with. My body doesn't really do what my brain wants it to do a lot of the time.
Hence the clumsiness.
Hence the clumsiness. So when I started in San Francisco, I was the understudy. So they put me in an ensemble track and I had no clue what I was doing. And I mean that in the realest sense, to where the dance captain, Alice and Leo, we were doing kind of she was trying to teach me the very minimal dancing my track had in Ozzy's ballroom. And she goes, okay, at the end of this, how do you feel about a Shanae turn? And I looked at her and I was like, what's a Shanae turn? I had no idea. I know what a Shanae turn is now, and I can kind of do one, but like, don't ask me to do like a full tap dance number. I wish that I was better at dancing. I respect so much the people who just, it's built into. It's incredible. Dancing is incredible.
I've always envied true good dancers because of the amount of control and strength and natural strength you have to have.
And physical expression. Yeah. Like, it's so beautiful. And I try to do that with my voice, but physically, that's such a different beast. That it was not really my kind of beast. Well, I was built for other things.
This goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. Actually, we were joking around about, you know, the Idinas and the Edens, and and there are people. There's a certain type of person who has the chops to do the Elphabas. And which is not the same as the Glindas. And all of you are in, it's a sisterhood, exactly what you said, because it is so hard and so difficult. And to make it look as effortless as all of you do takes some true, true talent. And especially when you're singing hoisted, 20, 30 feet in the air, one of the endings to one of the hardest songs.
Yes.
On stage, right? It takes it takes a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Chutzpah.
There you go. I think that's exactly it. It takes a different kind of person. I don't think people understand how difficult it is mentally, emotionally, physically, vocally. Elphaba is so difficult. It's exhausting. You can't really do much else in your life with the energy that you have left. And I don't think anyone really understands how hard that is unless you've gone through it, unless you've done Elphaba. And so I think there is kind of a connection and a sisterhood there, because it's like, I know what you went through. You know what I went through. Mm-hmm. You know the experience of how thrilling it is, but how draining and hard it is.
Well, the 2015 tour where you were Elphaba,
lead on tour.
Yeah. So is that harder, or was, I assume it was harder. So correct me if I'm wrong, that you're not only are you doing this hard ass role, but you're also changing cities, changing sets, changing stages.
Tour is hard. So doing the show full time was probably, I think I took a step back and I was like, this is probably the happiest and most fulfilled I've ever been doing lead on tour. Wow. 8 times a week. Incredible. But it is harder. It takes over your whole life. And especially on tour, where it's kind of the only thing that you can do. Yeah. You're living in this kind of bubble, traveling from city to city with the people that you've kind of made into your family. It's very difficult. They usually put an Elphaba on tour first, so they can kind of build up their chops. And tour is difficult in itself, but doing lead on tour was, it's just wild. It's a marathon, and it's exhausting, and but it's so fulfilling. I'm addicted to doing Elphaba. I'm addicted to doing Elphaba. I love it so much. It's a challenge, and I just welcome every second of that.
Do you ever miss Elsa?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, those costumes.
Oh,
also,
beautiful.
I got to be blonde.
Right.
Never thought that I would ever be blonde in my life. But that was fun. Beautiful costume, beautiful wigs, and getting to sing like an iconic song. And especially like all the kids in the audience loved it so much. And they would come dressed up in their costumes and, Disney dreams there. And doing Elsa was really incredible. When that twinkle right before Let It Go happens of the piano, you can kind of hear the buzz in the audience and the energy, because so many people know that song. So many people know Let It Go. And I do miss that feeling of like, oh, this was my dream and I'm doing it actively. So of course I miss it. I love doing it. And the people that I got to be on stage with were just beautiful, wonderful people that will always be close to my heart.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating! So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that five times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals.
It was such a great cast, and I know a lot of people from the original cast, and I mean, especially getting to work alongside Casey Levy and Patty Muir.
Oh my God!
Like two of Broadway.
What a dream!
Literal Broadway royalty.
Casey and Patty.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness.
Iconic.
Yeah. They were incredible. And I mean, the whole show, again, this is one of those types of people that, you know, you put your shoulders back, you put your head up, and you carry this show.
Yes.
And that is pressure. That is emotional and physical stress that
you
have to maintain.
Leading a company with grace and kindness is a feat that
do you feel like
those ladies.
Do you feel like you become like a sort of an unofficial CEO of when you're leading a company, right? You set the tone for the rest of the cast.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it comes from the top. Not that the leads are like the top, because we're all doing the same show. But I think there is a sense of, like, you know, the people who are leading the show are very much like you said, like the CEO of, like, I mean, we don't get to tell anyone what to do or anything, but there is like a tone that you set with, you know, your personality, your energy. Mm-hmm. You know, if your leads have like high energy and are excited and present with what they're doing, you know, people feed off of that energy. You know, doing theater is so energetic. And there's such a connection that vulnerable. And what happens on stage and the connections made on stage goes very deep. It runs very deep. So I think you're right. I think the people that lead a company, it's a responsibility in a way. Yeah.
So when you get the call, if you're like, all right, I'm going on for Elphabuzz, is it just like, all right, I'm stepping into this track technically, right? Because you know what to sing, you know what to say, you know where to move, so you don't get knocked in the head, hopefully. But do you ever think about the emotional leadership aspect of it as well, or does that come after the fact?
I know there's a sense of, like, you have to be ready emotionally before you go out there on that stage to do the thing, you know. But I don't think I'm ever like actively like, I gotta lead this company, you know, because there is a sense of like, we're all, at least in my mind, we're all equals. I know some people don't really, they like to be like the diva star, Mm-hmm. But to me, like, one of my mottos is I am better than no one and no one is better than me. And I think that applies very much to doing the show with other beautiful humans who are putting their hearts and souls and bodies and emotions and mental abilities into this thing that we're all doing together.
I think that is very, very true, because the whole thing, when you're in an ensemble, and especially when you have big dance numbers, you have to be aware of everything and everyone. Otherwise, like I say it all the time on the podcast, this is the Olympics of theater. You are all at the top of your game. You have to be in tip-top shape and be on it all the time. Otherwise, you kick someone or you fall down or you hurt. Like, you can get serious.
And it happens. Yeah. Live theater is, things happen. Yeah. You know, a set piece doesn't come out on stage. Okay, well, we got to figure out what we're doing now in the moment while still staying in character and making the story still happen.
Do you know, it's funny, I was having this conversation with my friend last night, my Busch Gardens friend. She was saying she saw something recently where a guy came out, sat in a chair, and all four legs just went boop and broke. And it bothered her so much because nobody acknowledged it. Yep. Nobody paid attention to it. And then just slowly, some little hand came and behind the scenes and was like pulling the chair.
This happens off stage all the time. If a prop breaks or something and something falls off or somebody drops something, everybody's got their eye on it, like in their peripheral, and they're like, okay, working out in their mind. Okay, how do I walk over there and grab this without it looking like? Because you got to grab it off the stage. If there's something on the stage, these dancers are going to come off, and if they don't see it, they're going to trip on it. So you better be active and be like, there's something on the ground there. Let me find a way. So while you're doing your lines and your songs and, you know, embodying this character and this story, there's a part you kind of split your mind in half. And you're like, there's a part where I'm like, okay, you got to do the technical part of go pick up this bell that's fallen off on stage, and you know, someone eventually will do it. You know, scoop it up on stage.
See, people scoop it up, or they'll kick it into the wings, or something.
Exactly, or into the pit, or
trumpet player is like, damn it, freaking bell!
I know, just like raining bells,
ringing props.
Yes.
So let's wrap the episode with three questions I ask everyone to end the episodes here. The first one just simply is, what motivates you?
What motivates me? Love.
For?
Love for what we get to do. Love for the theater. Love for the energetic exchange between performer and audience. Love for the community of Broadway and musical theater in general. I mean, we always say it's like a small community, but it's also like, if you spread out and kind of see all the people and all the kids and teenagers who love musical theater and Broadway, it can be like a big inclusive community. It's a place where everyone can belong and be a part of this thing. And so when you're on stage, you're like, this whole community is behind me and it's bigger than what I can even see. So that is very motivating to me, is the love that people put into this thing that we all enjoy together.
That is such a beautiful answer. Okay. Next question. What advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now, starting out down a similar path?
So I'll say what my mom always told me is work hard and be kind. And then other things will fall into place. You know, if you work hard and you are kind to the people around you, things fall into place. And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Can you repeat the question?
What advice would you give to your younger self? And then younger people listening now, starting out down a similar path.
Yeah. So the advice I would give to myself when I was younger is, work harder. Don't just glide on. You're like, okay, I'm just going to be a singer. It's like, no, you have to put the work in. And I think that's something I learned from doing Wicked when I was, you know, 23 and no clue what I was doing, you know, and I was always late. I was very chronically late. And so I think I would tell my younger self, like, dude, stop being late to everything. Like, it's not cute. The show has to go on. And if people aren't ready to go, then it's not going to happen. So don't be late. Try to fix that in my life. But also, yeah, work hard and be kind. And I think advice for people who want to do this kind of thing in their life, what I always say to like kids is like, absorb as much as you can. Look at the greats, you know, and learn from them. If you just watch performance, you can get something out of it. It's a masterclass. And when I say absorb things, I mean plays, musicals, movies, you know, reading books about theater, seeing how the whole machine kind of works, doing community theater, doing musicals at church, doing musicals at school. And that applies, you know, theater and musicals, kind mm-hmm. of, you know, same kind of deal. But yeah, I think absorbing as much as you can and letting it live inside of you, it can come out in a more genuine, beautiful, studied way.
So don't dance through life. Don't be a Fiera.
No, don't go on autopilot. Be present where you are.
Be an Elfie, don't be a Fiero. There you go.
Don't be a Fiero. Maybe Act Two Fieros is fine.
Yeah, maybe be an Act Two
swinging Fiero. Swinging in on that rope, saving the day, swinging in on that rope in the cornfield.
Right. Be an Act Two Fiero, not an Act One Fiero. That's your new slogan.
There it is. There's my new motto.
There's your new motto. What's
Forget
the motto
the other
with
ones.
You? All right, last question. If you could see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Oh my gosh. Sorry, that's a really hard question.
Mm-hmm.
One show?
Yes.
There are so many shows, Alan.
But you can see it
there
as
are
many
so
times
many
as
shows.
You want. You're stuck on a desert island.
Oh,
you
my
have.
Gosh. I know I'm going to pick something and then I'm going to think about it an hour from now and be like, no, I want to pick another thing and I'm going to change my answer. But I can't really do that. Right off the top of my head, the thing that I love right now is Hadestown. I think it's so creative and beautiful.
It is.
And I've only seen it once, but I was on the third row. I got house seats, but I was on the third row and once Wait For Me started and those lamps started swinging, I was just in tears. And so it's a beautiful story. And I think it was really creative the way that they did it from I was listening to, there's that original kind of concept
album yeah.
which I love.
It's also like 12 years old or something.
It's so good though. And then some of the things are changed. I'm like, they shouldn't have changed that. So I'm like, like an old Hadestown fan, you know. But right now I feel like that's kind of what I would want to continue seeing. And I'll probably change my answer later, but that's the one that is right off the top of my head. I'm like, I just want to keep
seeing
that one.
That's good. Yeah. We'll go good. With that. All right. Where can we find we'll you online? Social media.
Social media on Instagram, which is pretty much the one thing that I've kind of concentrated on. Facebook, I don't usually even look at. Twitter, I'm kind of a lurker at Alyssa Fox. Instagram, where I usually reside, is at Alyssa Joy Fox, which is my middle name. But that's kind of where I am.
Alyssa Joy.
Alyssa Joy Fox. That's me. But my equity name is just Alyssa Fox. So.
My stage name is...
I'm not Delphi like a three-namer.
Never trust anyone with two first names.
There's so many, though.
I know.
There's so many, especially in theater. It's like, oh, somebody's got this name. Okay, I'm going to add my middle name.
I once,
there's very many three-namers.
There was a hot minute where I thought, I wanted to go by Alan Scott Seals, even though Scott is nowhere close to my middle name, because I just liked Alan Scott Seals. I don't know why.
You just liked it.
I just like Scott, yeah. And but then my initials would be ass, and so I didn't.
Wait, I did not expect you to say that, but that's very funny. But I would say maybe that's a reason to add Scott to your name.
Oh, all right. Well, then welcome to the Theater Podcast with Ass. I'm your host.
Wait, no, that's a different show.
I'm your host.
That is a different show.
The Theater Podcast After Hours. I'm your host, Aster Hours.
Not rated PG. No, don't say Aster Hours.
Aster Hours. I am all about the dad jokes. All right. Get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. I'm on Instagram. Right. I'm on Instagram and what? I don't know. Instagram and Twitter. I'm on Instagram and theater. What the hell? I'm on Instagram and Twitter.
We're all on theater.
We're all on theater. We are
pump
high
it into
on
our
theater.
Veins.
High on theater. Theater_podcast. I'm on Facebook. I don't know what I'm doing. /official theater podcast. I'm on TikTok, where I know even less about what I'm doing at the theater podcast. Edited by Well-Rounded Hoodlum Productions. Jukebox the Ghost gave us our intro and outro music. And Alyssa Joy Fox, thank you for such a wonderful, wonderful chat.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.